thought for today. I like me in my heart. I like me in my heart. I like me in my heart. Why do we say, in my heart, I like me? Why don't you say, I like me? That's a good thing to say. Why do we say, in my heart? Well, we go around this world and we say that it's a nice world. We say there's a lot of beautiful people in this world. There's a lot of beautiful circumstances in this world, a lot of happy times and a lot of sad times. And all of them are subject to our attitude. For instance, we might love someone, and we might think that they're wonderful. We might think that we'd just love to be married to them. We'd love to have a relationship with them. We'd love to have them tucked in our heart as ours alone. And nothing comes of it. We go through life and have them as a friend, have them as somebody very precious in our world, but nothing ever comes. They never ask us to marry them. We never ask them to marry us. We never ask for a relationship. We never ask for to be close. And then we wonder why it doesn't happen. And we wonder what is going on. But you see, when we like ourselves in our heart, we don't need a relationship. If that is something that's nice to have, that's perfectly okay. But we don't need it. You see, that's a big difference. Needing it and experiencing it and enjoying it. When we can vicariously experience all the joys of life that we could ever want, then we don't have a need for them, but we can enjoy them. I can tell you about going fishing. Going fishing, big deal, you know. I can tell you about going fishing. I can tell you about going out to the lake and sitting in a boat and having your fish line hanging over the cork on top of the water. And a fish comes along and bites, and you pull him up. And you say, such a little guy. You throw him back in after you gently take the hook out of his mouth. And then a big fish comes along, and you pull him in. And you say, what a big fish. And you measure him, you take a picture of him, and you say, wow. That is the biggest fish I've ever caught. And then you say, I'm really not interested in eating him. I'm really not interested in taking him home. I'm not interested in cleaning him, getting him ready to eat. I just didn't go to a restaurant to have fish than to fix it myself. So you gently take the hook out of the mouth and throw him in so somebody else can have the pleasure of catching that big fellow. You see, you have experienced it physically, and you have experienced it vicariously. You've experienced it physically because you felt that you were out there fishing in the boat and pulling in these fish. But you were not really there. You were just there in my consciousness, in my mind, in my thought, as I was describing it to you. Now, why is it so many people read thriller magazines about all the terrible things of life? No, let's change the subject. Why do so many people read romance magazines? All about romance. How the perfect man comes along, and the perfect girl come along, and they perfectly meet each other, and they perfectly get together, and they have perfectly happy relationships. And of course, that kind of soapy stuff you read and you say, yeah, life isn't that way. So then you read one that has a little more adventure to it. You read how he's a struggling person and she's a struggling person. And together they understand each other's struggles and they work together and they love together and they have a joyous time together. And they work just harmoniously together. You say, wow, how wonderful. But still, you say, it's not for real. People don't do things like that. Then you see two guys who are working in a business. And the one guy doesn't do his part, and the other guy does more than his part. And the guy who does more than his part likes the guy who doesn't do his part, because the part that he does do is something the guy who does his part doesn't want to do. And so it makes a good arrangement. It makes a good arrangement. But the one who works hard has to say, what he invests in this business is worthwhile. And vicariously appreciate the fact that without him doing that, the business wouldn't be what it is either. But without him doing his big part, it wouldn't be where it is either. And so he doesn't possess the other fellow, he just delights in the fact that he does what he does. And the other fellow, of course, delights in this hard-working guy doing all of the manual work and all the physical work and so forth. And he just likes being the thinker or whatever it is he does. Now, they get along just fine. Have a very harmonious relationship. They like life. They like each other. They like their own separate worlds. They're not possessed by each other. They each do their job. Neither one says, you're not doing your part. They each do what they want to do. Now, you see, marriage is like that. The woman will never do enough to make the marriage worthwhile because she is a woman. The man, from a woman's point of view, will never do enough to make the marriage worthwhile because her sensitive, caring, loving nature is so supreme and so much greater than his. He's an old dolt. He'll never understand. You see, those are tolerable marriages. People live with that attitude about each other, and they get along. But they're putting each other down all the time. And they're not really living life to its fullest. And because they're not living life to its fullest, they're not getting great joy out of life. For instance, people come, they really do come. They come here to the monastery. And in the monastery, they look at the things that are being done, and they say, well, I could do that better than that person. I could do this better than that person. I could, you know, I should really be doing these things or those things. And as long as they're thinking those things, they don't like themselves. Because what they're saying is that they're not happy doing with what they're doing. In life, if we can enjoy every single thing we do, whatever it may be, to the fullest, we love life. And we love life when we like ourselves. When you like yourself, nobody can put you down, can they? When you like yourself, nobody can say, well, that was dumb. We were sitting at Carol's table, and I said something to Ellen about, did she do something? And Ellen started to explain what she had done, not whether she did it or whether she didn't. I said, Ellen, did you do it or didn't you? And she continued to do it. I said, Ellen, stop it. I asked you a question. It has a yes or no answer. Please give me yes or no. And then she said, no. I said, okay, now you can talk all you want. But I wanted the answer to the question. Ellen, for some reason, was defending herself. We all do. We defend ourselves when we are asked a question. We don't want to give a yes or no answer because a yes or no answer is too cut and dried. It might mean that's the end of the conversation. That's the end of our telling about that situation. And we want to make sure that people understand what we're thinking about that situation. Now, it doesn't matter. I did it right in front of Carol. But I did it in front of Carol because I wanted Carol to see that when you're asked a question, you answer it. You don't beat around the bush, because Carol had done that a great many times. And I couldn't very well say to her, now you tell me the answer, yes or no, you know. So I had to do it through Ellen. And Ellen just knows, she's got big shoulders, she handles that so beautifully, don't you? Yeah. But in life, we defend ourselves all the time by beating around the bush instead of answering questions straight out. If our husband says to us, well, how was your day? Oh, boy. You know, if she wants to have him feel sorry, she tells him how terrible it was. If she wants him to feel good, she'll say, I had such a wonderful day. Everything seemed to go right today. And the children, they behaved, and the neighbors came over and brought me a cake and this and that. Wow, you know, everything just going honky-dory. Now, she could have had all those same things go on. And she could have picked one or two items that were not too good. I said, you know, that vacuum cleaner just wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. I tried it. I did it. I plugged it in here. I did this and I did that and did the, you know, and that could have been her one claim to fame for that day. Whereas the neighbor bringing the cake over, the children being courteous and loving and all these other things didn't make any difference at all. We have to choose. We have to choose in our heart what our values are. And if our values are the highest and the most beautiful, we say, I like me. We sing, I like me. We talk, I like me. Now, we were talking about I like me the other day, and we were singing and teaching the children to sing it, and it was such a lovely thing. I like me, I like me, I like me. And then we had them point to the other person and say, I like you, I like you, and then I like all. Well, it's a charming thing, but I am very much opposed to it. We have so little time to work with people. And while it's noble to say, I like you and I like all, we don't like you and we don't like all. We just don't like you and we don't like all. You understand that? Mm-hmm. It's bad enough we don't like me. We don't like ourselves. So our time, our effort, our affirmation should be sent almost entirely on I like me. I like me. Oh, it's so noble to say I like you and I like all. And that's wonderful for an advanced consciousness. But an advanced consciousness doesn't think that either. An advanced consciousness thinks, I created you. That's why you're so good. You know, that's why I like you. I created you in my thought, in my heart, in my mind. I created you all that you are. And so I sort of rebel at some of these things that come my way. And I say, just a minute. Just a minute. People come up and they say, I'd like to be whole and perfect. I'd like to be healed. And I'd say, well, in my heart, I see you whole and perfect right now. No, no, I have a hurt foot. See, this toe is all bubbled up because I stubbed it. I see you whole and perfect right now. Oh, my toe. I see your toe whole and perfect right now. But you see, the problem is not with your toe. The problem is not with your toe. The problem is with your mind. Because your mind is receiving information from the nerves on the end of your toe saying, I got bumped and I don't like it. If your mind instantly would say, all is whole and perfect. I am whole and perfect. Then the nerves would quit sending that report up. The healing activity of relaxation and peace and togetherness would take place. And it's done. Remember when Ilsa was pouring a cup of tea and poured the water right on her wrist and shook it off and then went on with what she was doing. Boiling hot water on her wrist. And then she went on talking to her friend. And then after her friend left, she looked at her wrist and, you know, there's not even a blemish of where the boiling water had touched her. She had taken her attention away from it. And this is what we all can do. We can take our attention away from the negative circumstance and put it to the positive. We take our attention to the universal rather than the particular. Now, you're all going to be reading or have been reading about specific healing and general healing. Have you come to that chapter yet again? You're going to be coming to specific and general healing. Specific healing, you better be careful. Because you may have a healing attitude about your toe, but it's still sending up vibrations to your brain. Do you know? Do you know? They cut off a person's leg and the person still thinks they have their leg? You heard of that. They still think they have the leg. They haven't got it. It's mental. How much more do we need to point out to ourselves that this is mental? We're working with a mental attitude, a mental philosophy, a mental position in life. When we have a clear, pure, wonderful vessel, we have a pure, clear, wonderful experience. When we have vessel that is not clear, pure, and wonderful, what happens is that our consciousness is not clear, pure, and wonderful. And no matter what we want to speak to ourselves about healing, it won't work. Because we're trying to prove something to ourselves that we don't believe. And if you and I, in our heart, can say, I like me, and say it, 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 just say it until we don't think anything else, wonderful things happen. When we were in Guyana, we were teaching this in the school, to the little children, to the adults, wherever we went. And people started telling us, you know, I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm saying, I like me. People tell us, do you know that I feel so wonderful? I feel so filled with power and joy. Big deal. Big deal. Of course you feel filled with power and joy and wonder. Because you like yourself. When you don't like yourself, then you don't feel that. And you don't like yourself when you say, I don't like myself. I'm not worthy. I'm not a desirable, wonderful person. And we do this all the time. We do this when we say the job we're doing is not right for us to do. When we say what someone says to us, or if someone touched us or something, and it wasn't what we felt was right, then we are building up in our consciousness a great big boogeyman that's going to overwhelm us, and we'll live in unhappiness. People do that. But you and I, we know better. We know putting the cause in motion of I like me, putting the cause in motion of I am wonderful, I'm the creator of my world, I created everything out there, you, them, it, all, I created everything. I created everything in here. Me, my body, my mind, my soul, my being. I'm God. Everything is God. Everybody is God. Everybody is creating the same way. But I'm not God for you. I'm God for me. And I create you acting a certain way, and it may not be your way to act. But in my presence, you appear to act that way. Because you're my creation. And my creation appears to act however I create them acting. If I create my presence as applauding me and taking my picture and telling me how what a wonderful movie star or movie actor I am, wow, you know? Or if I create them saying, oh, you were terrible, oh, you were ugly, oh, that's what you wanted to be. That was the role you were playing. And you can only say, yep, I made it. I did it well. But is that the role we want to play, even as a movie actor? Do we want to play the bad guy, ever? Do we want to play the bad guy, ever? Never. You know, the good cop, bad cop sort of thing. The good cop makes you feel good and you say things you shouldn't, and the bad cop makes you feel bad and makes you tell on other people, you know. And there's no good cop, no bad cop. There's no good guy, bad guy syndrome. There's only I like me. And when we say I like me, all the world is wonderful. All the world is fantastic. As I took my walk this morning, I walked out of the house, out of the light. I couldn't see a thing. And I thought, gee, it's going to be dark out. And then, as I walked a little further, my eyes accustomed to the darkness, the road was white, wide open in front of me. And I thought, my goodness, why didn't I see that right away? Well, I was accustomed to different light. I adjusted to a different level of light. And I walked along. And then there were parts of the road that were damp, very damp. And they blended in with the side of the road. And you didn't know where the road was. And so at a point like that, I said, I walked the center of the road. I walked the center of the road. I had no idea where the center of the road was, but my inner self did. And my inner self carried me right along the center of the road. You see, it's so simple. yet so demanding. So simple, and yet so demanding. I saw Sylvia coming in this morning with her flashlight turned on. And I thought to myself, why has she got her flashlight turned on in the house here? You know, why does she have her flashlight? The minute you come within the range of the lights here, I always turn my flashlight off. Because I want it to last as long as possible. Now, we have lots of batteries around here. That's no big deal, a few cents for a battery. But it's the principle of the thing. You see, it's always the principle of the thing. You turn the flashlight on because you need it, and you turn it off because you don't need it. You turn the flashlight on, and you want it to go on, and if you have had it on when you didn't need it, then perhaps sometime when you need it, it'll have burned out. And you have to put new batteries in, or a new bulb, or whatever. But the principle is, when you have a desire for something, manifest it. Now, if Sylvia were walking down the path with her cat eyes and not needing the flashlight, seeing everything perfectly, what would happen when Sylvia would step into the house? She'd sort of be blinded, wouldn't she, by the bright light because she was adjusted to the darker light. And she'd stand there for a moment and relax and adjust. You adjust very quickly. And everything would be harmonious. But now, what if her eyes didn't adjust? What if she had trained her eyes not to adjust? And we can do that too. John gave us an illustration the other day. He woke up many mornings, and in the morning he looked over at the alarm clock and read the hands on the alarm clock perfectly. He looked out and could see the surrounding landscape perfectly, in perfect focus. And then he realized he didn't have his glasses on. So he put his glasses on, and then he could see it perfect too. But you see, it's all in our mind, all of us. Every organ, action, and function of our body functions out of our mental attitude. Does John say 27,000 million times a day, ha 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 ha, I have perfect eyes? Does John say every organ, action, function of my body is absolutely perfect right now? Let's forget the absolute. Every organ, action, function of my body is perfect. Does he say it? Every moment of his life, does he say that? No. Do you say that? Do I say that? No. And so, because we don't say it, we haven't got that built into our consciousness. Now, when can John stop saying that? Not when he experiences the wholeness, but when he lives that as a principle in his life. When every moment he's thinking he's in a perfect body. When everything he does, he recognizes that's a perfect body doing something there. A perfect mind doing something. When can you stop saying 2 times 2 is 4? When you have made it yours. When you use it, and it's, you use it, what's 12 times 12, Anita? No.
144.
Ah, yeah, you had to think about it, though. But 144 is right. You see, if Anita would just say 144, click, click, you know? Now, Ingeborg, what's 2 times 12?
24.
Very good. See, Anita, that's the way you want to do it. Evan, what's 1 plus 1?
12.
See, Anita, that's the way you want to do it. Click, click, click. Yeah. But I'm joking, and yet I'm not joking. We have made mathematics ours, and so we no longer have to be a student of mathematics. We are a user of mathematics. When we make the affirmation, I live in my eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body, a reality to us. We can use it. Then we use it, and we don't have to make the statement anymore because we live the statement. Does it make sense? And that's what it's all about. We live the statement. Now, do you ever have somebody you'd like to have a perfect relationship with? You just say, hey, I like me, and I like the people I create in my world. And that person is really wonderful. That's great. See? Don't say, oh, that person better not be with somebody else. That person shouldn't have this here. That person is for mine alone. You know, and you know, we kill ourselves. Because if you want that person to be yours alone, go right ahead. And will you be sorry? You will become that person's mother, that person's father, that person's sister, brother. You'll become that person's all. And that person will depend on you. That person will need you and want you. And if you are gone too long, where were you, dear? Where were you? You know, oh, my goodness sakes, who needs that? So create everyone in your life as a joyous, wonderful experience. Anita, she thought she'd like a horse. So she created a horse in her life. And the horse was in her life about a year. And then the people say, well, they want to sell the horse. And Anita says, that's just fun. That horse is in my life. I enjoy it. And when that horse is not there, then another one will be there. I have whatever I choose to. I don't own that horse. That horse is nice. I don't own those people. I don't own the circumstance. I just own the opportunity to be myself and have fun at all times. And you know, that is what life is all about. It's all from our heart. I like me. And when we like ourselves in our heart, we are never touched by what anyone else does. Other people can push our buttons and push our buttons and push our buttons. Hey, but if you don't have any buttons, what can they push? What can they push? We had our friends in Guyana, and they were not familiar with hugging and kissing as we do it, you know, solidly. And they came up to me after each experience. That was a real hug. That was a hug that was meant from the heart, they say. Oh, I like that hug. Do it again, you know. I like that hug. You see, their hugs were sort of common, ordinary hugs. They were not insincere hugs, but they were respectful hugs. You know, you don't want to crush the bones. But the skinnier the guy or the girl that I hug, the tighter they hug me back. The bigger the person that I hug, they sometimes can't get their arms up around my back. I say, come on now, give me a hug too, you know. Not that I need the hug. I want them to have the privilege of sharing it, the privilege of giving something away and having no demand. And then after the OM, we didn't have a chance to teach them too well how to do it. But after the OM, they started grabbing people in clusters and hugging them. You know, three or four people hugging three or four people and kiss. Not the kissing so much for me on the cheek, you know, the old attitude of the, I don't want to say French kissing, but, you know, like the French kiss on one cheek and the other, that sort of stuff. But they loved it. They loved it. Because we did it from the heart. And they heard it from the heart, and they felt it. They felt no possession. They felt no improper attitude about it, no impropriety about it. They didn't think we were sexually interested in them or that we were trying to manipulate and control them. They just thought, hey, these are cool people, real cool. These are people that are love people. And that's what we want our world to think about us. But it won't think that about us unless we love ourselves. And when we love ourselves, then we can show it outwardly and nobody will misunderstand. Nobody will misunderstand. Sylvia told us about the young man who persistently asked her for a date. And she persistently said, no, thank you. And her girlfriend said, how could you do that? How could you be so cold and not go on a date with this man who wanted you so much? And Sylvia said, I'm me. I didn't want a date with him. Now, somebody else might have come along and asked. It might have been a different thing. But that particular guy, nice guy, I didn't want a date with him. I don't have to prove it to anybody. I don't have to say, now look, I don't like being unkind to you. I don't like saying no to anybody. What's that all about? That's a defense mechanism, isn't it? You just say, hey, when I want to say yes, I do. I enjoy talking to you. Walking with you, but rocking with you, no. No dancing. Or whatever else you might want to interpret it to be. But, in my heart, I like me. And when we like ourselves in our heart, we're whole and perfect. We're untouched. We shine out to everybody the joy that's in our heart, the love that's in our heart, the peace that's in our heart, the goodness that's in our heart. and it's wonderful. I love you. You're wonderful.